Tommy Points, episode 6. Woo. Episode 6. I mean, Dante.
We have Dante. So for people that are checking in right now, probably 2 minutes ago, as we joined the call, James Harden got traded to the Nets for 8 first-round picks, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen. But then Caris LeVert got traded to Indiana for Victor Oladipo. So right now, my mind is just blown. There's just so much going on right now. This is nuts. This is not this league, and all caps, this league right now.
Yeah, we're going to react to all that and more. Like, we didn't expect all this, but we're going to react to all that and more on this episode of Tommy Points. Let's get to it. All right, so Dante, we were just talking about this pre-show. This trade is absurd. I mean, it was all going downhill for Harden in Houston. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it was clear that a trade was going to happen. Mm-hmm. We heard rumors about everywhere, but still, somehow, some way, this just like blindsided me. Even though I knew James Harden was getting traded eventually, this mm-hmm. still just like slapped me in the face, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the last 6 weeks for the Rockets have been a roller coaster, because even just this resurfaced a few minutes ago. It was this article from the Rockets saying, we are super content holding on to Westbrook and Harden going into the season, this and that. Westbrook's gone. Now Harden's gone. I mean, it was written on the wall. We all knew this was going to happen eventually. It was mm-hmm. just a matter of who was going to take him, what the offer was going to be. And in all honesty, last night was when James Harden had that presser, and he was just basically telling everyone that the situation can't be fixed, and that he basically just said he wanted to be traded without saying that directly. Like, you had to know that this was going to happen almost right away. And I thought Houston's going to take the best available offer. Philly was in there. You know, Ben Simmons, I'm assuming, was the main piece to build around. Houston wanted Maxey and Matisse Thybulle. Yeah, so I'm assuming the Philadelphia just didn't want to get rid of everyone else but Simmons. In my opinion, in my honest opinion, and I want to know your opinion as well, I think if he went to the Sixers, I think they would have been the best team in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. Him and Embiid would have been disgusting. But
so my on that, because I know you tweeted that out, and I kind of went through the replies too before the show. I feel like you got a few people agreeing, but a lot of people don't see it. Mm-hmm. I'm honestly, now I don't know about just clear-cut best in the Eastern Conference, but I'm way more on your side than even when I thought about it, like before seeing you tweet it. I kind of thought about it after you tweeted, and I was like, wait a second, that's like the type of player that Embiid and like would work well with. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this guy can, one, stretch the floor way more than Simmons. I don't want to call James Harden a good passer. I think he gets the assist numbers. He's mm-hmm. not really a good passer, but he could still pass the ball. I think that two-man game could be one of the best two-man games in the entire NBA. So once you tweeted that, I kind of got to thinking about it, and I think that that makes the Sixers so, so, so much better if they were to get Harden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it bumps them right away to the top of the Eastern Conference, but that's just because I haven't seen it yet.
You know I get that. It's a matter of if it would work or not.
Right.
Obviously, that's hypothetical at this point, because he didn't end up in Philly. So let's talk about the Nets. Okay, so the Nets now have Kyrie, James Harden, Durant. They got rid of LeVert and Allen. So this, and Torian Prince as well.
Yep.
So what the starting lineup would be: Kyrie, Harden, Durant. You got DeAndre Jordan, and then who would
Dinwiddie?
Be didn't when he's healthy, I'm assuming you throw him in. Joe Harris, I guess, would be the starting four, right? The stretch four. Now listen, we joked about this. Plenty of people have been joking about this since the rumor came out that Brooklyn might be interested in Harden months ago. You know, there's only one basketball. You know, Kyrie is a hothead enough as it is, and there's so much stuff going on with him currently that we will get into. Durant's playing at a high level once again, so he's not really the issue. But then you're bringing in another guy like Harden, who's also a head case, who's literally
Kyrie and Harden had the big, like, the two names that have the most drama attached right now.
Biggest storyline right now.
And James Harden and January 13th, they're on the same team.
Yeah, so it's like you look at it, like you look at it on paper. Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant. You're thinking like, who the hell is going to stop that team? I'll tell you who's going to stop that team is themselves. Yep. That's the only team that could stop the Nets at this point, in my opinion, that's not named the Lakers, are the Nets. Like you said, there's so much drama. There's so many storylines going around just those two players alone. And now you put them on one team. There's only one basketball. We thought Kyrie and KD were going to implode at some point. Now you throw Harden in the mix. Like, what? It's going to be like a nuclear bomb. Yeah. You're literally just pouring gas on the fire at this point. And you look at it that way. You can look at it the other way. I mean, if they make it work, I mean, listen, Harden got his wish. He didn't want to be in Houston. He wanted to be in a winning organization. That's obviously a winning organization right now. If, you know, they talk to each other, they sit down, they're like, listen, if we put our egos aside, if we, you know, share the basketball and we make this work, who's to say that they're not going to be at the top of the East for the next few years? You know what I mean?
It's the, and I kind of alluded to this when we were talking about it, pre-hitting that record button. This is such a different big three, and I don't know if it's just like in the heat of the moment, but this is such a different big three than a lot of big threes we've seen in the past.
Yeah,
you know, all these guys can handle the ball, all these guys can shoot, all these guys can create their own shot and score in multiple ways. Like, yeah, we're not talking about defense here, but I don't know if you're gonna necessarily need defense if you score 250 points a night.
Yeah, think about it. How many points are they going to start averaging now if they actually make that? Where you got three guys on your team that could legitimately give you 30 points. I mean, Harden's only averaging 25 a game, but he's been averaging over 30 for the past 2-3 years. Yeah. KD is just about at 30. Kyrie, I think he's at 25, 26 or something. That's 90 points between three guys. That's insane. And that's
assuming one of them doesn't pop off.
Yeah, like, we're exactly.
Forgetting that 30 points for these three guys in particular are kind of just like a good night. You know what I mean? It's a good, like, hey, he played above average tonight.
Yeah,
but if you go and drop 40 points, which is so well within their realm of being able to do, we're talking about the three best top players in the NBA right now. It's like these guys could put up 100 between the three of them. Now, we keep saying it. I've heard you say it a bunch. I've said it, if this works. But I don't know. I mean, it's going to be crazy.
What are the chances of it actually working? Like, if we had to put a percent on it, what are the odds you think that I honestly right now, I'm probably going to go 50%.
What do you think working is defined as? Like, they become the best in the team they're supposed to be? Because that's almost like
The team that they're supposed to be is you win the championship this year.
Yeah.
I think working would be making it to at least the Eastern Conference Finals. Just like being able to play the next 60 games or so with as little drama as possible. You want to keep as much drama out of that locker room. If you can keep it steady, you can keep the chemistry going. I mean, like I said, the only team that could stop them is themselves. And kind of just to go off that, I'm going through Twitter right now because I want to see, like, you know, make sure like things are finalized and stuff. So we mentioned the Rockets got 8 first round picks in return from Brooklyn. Four of them are unprotected and 4 of them are pick swaps. Every single pick in that trade is unprotected. So Houston, listen, they got what they needed. I mean, they got the best possible package. I mean, Ben Simmons, we don't know what the Sixers offer was. Like, we're assuming Simmons was involved, but we don't really know. They took Caris LeVert, who they turned into Oladipo, Jared Allen, who they sent off to Cleveland, and 8 first round picks. Like, listen, you have a superstar that doesn't want to be there. I think that's really the best possible package that they could have gotten. You got a Victor Oladipo, former all-star, a guy that could easily give you 22, 23 points a night, and even more. I mean, he's a stud. He's just coming off of that quad injury. And 8 first round picks, unprotected. Like, this is literally, the Nets did this a few years ago at Boston, and you know how it turned out for them. I mean, we were talking about this before the episode. Like, how many times does this work out in the long run for teams that give up that many picks?
Like, not very often.
Not very often. No. Look at the Thunder. I mean, look at the Clippers. I mean, like, obviously right now it's not something like the picks are worth much, but the Clippers literally gave up 6-7 for unprotected / pick swaps for Paul George in a few years. I mean, Paul George signed the extension, but let's say Kawhi leaves, that Clippers team isn't going to be nowhere near good where they are now. So those picks are going to, you know, the stock's going to go up. Same with Houston. That Nets team, they're under contract for 2 more years. If they decide after 2 years they want to leave, and the Nets, they're screwed. You know what I mean? So it's like there's risk. There's a ton of risk in that. But if they're in win now mode, like I said, the only team beating them is themselves.
You don't activate win now mode better than what the Nets just did.
No, like that
is
clear, like clear as day. When like they want to win this year and next year, like there's just no doubt about that. They're not trying to, they're not going for participation trophies or second place medals. They're going for the big thing this year, and it'll be interesting to see if they do it. That's for damn sure.
And you know, you touched on Oladipo too. I think that that's a obviously a good get for them. The guy has shown already this season that he's I'm not gonna say 100%. Obviously, I feel like you take a little bit, I guess, to get back to 100%, but he definitely has shown he still has that explosiveness.
Easily.
He's able to play. He's got, you know, he's if you lose a guy like James Harden, you're getting a bunch of picks and some sort of role players back. The fact that you then flip one of those, and I'm calling Caris LeVert, I guess, a role player, which I think that that's fair. Maybe like a staple bench player is a better way to put it. I don't know. He would probably start on a lot of teams. So I guess he's better than a role player, but you send him out and, you know, and who knows what else. And then you get sort of another centerpiece star back in Houston and those picks. You know, it's like, I'm not going to go as far to say like, oh, like you just replaced Harden, but you did kind of, you know, it's not just like, oh, John Wall and then who else? You know, you now got another star. They have the young Christian Wood too. Like Houston kind of covered its ass too.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, I mean, from the quotes that we've heard John Wall last night saying, like, you know, it's unfair to the guys in the locker room. Like, we have 14 guys that want to play and one doesn't. And then DeMarcus Cousins earlier, I mean, just straight out was just like, I came here to play with John Wall. Like the disrespect came right even before that interview. You know, like, I'm not saying like the Houston, like the Rockets are still going to be like good, but like, John Wall, Victor Oladipo, Christian Wood, and DeMarcus Cousins, like, that's not a bad four to have. I mean, and all considering, I mean, how much worse could, you know, losing Harden, like, obviously, you're losing Harden, but you saw how they've been the last four or five games, like, could they get better from this, like, chemistry-wise? Like, now that you're bringing in someone that wants to be there, you know, I mean, obviously, he didn't ask to get traded to Houston, but, you know, you have a guy that's more willing to play these games and be a part of this team. I mean, that could go a long way for Houston. It could be like the Thunder, how everyone thought they were going to suck last year, and then they made the playoffs. I think the Rockets are still a playoff team after this trade. I really do.
I think they're borderline now, because I do think James Harden's like, I know, like, I feel like everyone probably has only almost minus like 10% of how good he is in the last couple weeks, just because he's shown up like fat in those pictures and then drops like,
dude, 16, that video of him last night, the announcer was like, he had a pregame meal before the game. I was just like, oh no, it's so mean.
Okay, this is my thing. I don't get how he then takes those warm-ups off and stuff, and he isn't
right. I know, like, it's just like in the warm-ups he looks big, but like it in looks game,
so real. Like,
yeah,
like,
I know,
he has like a pregnancy suit on underneath it or something. But what I'm saying is that, like, I think because of all the recent drama, because of how he's underperformed, I feel like people are also forgetting how good he was and how he pretty much carried
recently
that team.
Bias.
Yeah, so it's like I don't know if they're even going to get back to any point where they could have been with Harden, even though that ship had long sailed when he decided
definitely.
He wasn't there. But playoff team, like, I think maybe I would agree with that. Like, you know, 8-6 seed type of thing.
Yeah, I'm not putting them as like a top four seed, but I think they're definitely in contention for that at least 6-8 spot for sure. At least they'll make it interesting.
I think that's total, and I'm really, really excited to see, like, kind of you said, you know, maybe they didn't get better, but now new chemistry. That's like a pretty fun team when you think about it. Like,
I mean, look at the Celtics last year. I mean, we lost Kyrie, we lost Al Horford. Everyone's like, you know, we lost the talent, but the chemistry was still there. And look how good they were. The same thing could happen with Houston. Who knows?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, James Harden could have just been an absolute cancer, which I think is not, it shouldn't be breaking news right now. Like, he clearly was, but like, who knows of how much of a cancer he was. So
it's,
I don't know.
It's just crazy to me, because that guy has literally been handed everything since he came to Houston back in, what was it, 2012, 2013. Yeah. Like, they literally, like, the quote a few weeks ago was just like, whatever James wants, he gets.
Yeah.
Like, they literally just catered their entire culture, their entire team revolved around him. So it's like, for him to turn on the franchise as quickly as he did, like, it's baffling. And, you know, we're talking about the recency bias and how the past few games people are thinking that way. Even on Twitter today, I was talking about him going to the Sixers and my thoughts there, and you know, how it would be an upgrade over Simmons in the scoring category, because Simmons is averaging only 13 points a game right now. I don't know if people realize that, but he's not doing too well this year. Harden, obviously a much better offensive player. This guy was like Like, I don't know how much of an upgrade is when Harden's only averaging 17 points a game. And I was like, nope, he's averaging 25 points, 10 assists, and 6 rebounds. Yeah. I was like, the last 4 games, like, you can say what you want about those games, but those games were him checking out. That was him literally just clocking out of Houston and was like, if you don't trade me, this is just going to keep happening. He just wasn't trying. It was obvious. It was so obvious. I mean, look at his free throw. I mean, the free throws is alone. Like, he's not getting to the line at all, and he does that all the time. Wasn't shooting as much, and he's shooting not good. It was just, he just did not want to be there, and he got his wish. That's damn superstar got his wish, just like always.
I mean, yeah, that's literally, they got to put that in parentheses after the NBA, mm-hmm. which is like the tagline for the NBA, which, I mean, it is what it is. These are the guys that make money for the league and stuff, and, you know, they get the, obviously, me and you are diehard NBA fans, Celtics fans, but, you know, we can appreciate the non-superstars, but the NBA, I guess, needs to get the outside fans, and that's why they let superstars pretty much determine wherever they want to go, they're going to go.
That's
like
right.
James Harden demanding a trade, Russell Westbrook demanding a trade. It's like, you used to not really be able to speak out just about your organization and say, like, you just get benched.
You just wouldn't get paid, you would get benched. Exactly. Yeah. That nowadays it's not like that. Everyone has a voice with social media and everything going on. Like, things get out so quick. Even you have guys like liking tweets that could be about bad things, but it's just like, there's so many things that could happen nowadays, and superstars just have a much bigger voice, and they have more leverage, I guess. And in this case, Harden really had the leverage, I guess. I mean, Houston could have held on to him for 2 more years. I mean, if you look at it from that way, they had the leverage. But at the same time, Harden, he's gone now, so he obviously had all control there. They had no choice but to trade him.
I know. It's
we'll
see how it plays out.
That'll be interesting. I can't wait. Maybe I can wait, but it'll be interesting to watch the first Brooklyn-Boston game when that does happen. Yeah. It'll be very interesting to see how that goes.
Their first nationally televised game with the three of them together when they're all playing is going to break numbers, records.
Yeah, this is a storyline of its own. People are just going to want to see how it works. People are going to either want to see it fail, or people are going to want to see it see them succeed. No in between, really.
All right, so kind of not on the same topic, but we did mention him a couple times. Kyrie Irving. I feel like we got to talk about him. I don't know how long we have to talk about him, but
it's always something.
It's always something, and it's so funny to see it, because when we were getting him here in Boston, Cavs fans told us, you know, watch out, blah blah blah, and I was blinded by the light, you know, I'm sure you were too. It's like, I know, it's a different story here. Just on this podcast, I think a few episodes ago, I said, no, Kevin Durant knows what he's getting in Kyrie Irving. The Nets know. They know what he is now. He's an established asshole type of thing.
Yeah.
He still just goes above and beyond and is the Grim Reaper. You know, you've seen that meme going around of him stopping at each door and just ruining the team is there. Like, I don't understand him. And I think that's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah,
I don't understand Kyrie Irving.
I mean, on First Take today, Stephen A. Smith just straight up said that he should retire. He was just like, he literally was just like, if you're not going to play, like, listen, like, everything that he's doing outside of basketball is amazing, and what he does, like, off the court is not anything. Like, him as a person off the court, no one should say anything about, because he's donated millions of dollars, started college funds for all these different students and stuff like that. Like, he's off the court, he's a great person, but it's like, the thing is, he can continue doing all those things and still play basketball. Right now he's picking and choosing,
right?
And even Kyrie said a few years ago in an interview that he was like, I might retire early. He might not even, after this contract, it wouldn't shock me if he's just gone and just starts focusing on, you know, social reform, you know, focusing on, you know, everything going on in the world, which is cool. But, you know, it's just, it's odd. Like, you have a commitment to a team. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you're committed to a team, you're getting paid all this money, and you're not showing up for personal reasons. When you say you just don't want to play, like, that's not something you want to say. That makes you look bad. That makes you look really bad. And like, the organization.
Let me ask you this. Do you think he loves basketball anymore? I know it's a cheesy question, but, like, how can you say yes, looking at what he's done in the last month?
I think it's more of a hobby for him than anything at this point.
Maybe a relevancy keeper, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's just something.
So people know who he is.
Exactly. People know who he is. He's making money off of it. I mean, obviously, as a player, I'm assuming, you know, he still has these goals of winning championships and, you know, maybe not individual awards, but, you know, being successful in the postseason and such. But right now, he's just basically acting like he doesn't want to be there. I mean, there was this thing that came out not too long ago, an hour. It was an update on the Kyrie thing. This guy, Thomas D on Twitter, was told Kyrie has been furious at the organization for some time for not giving him more input on the head coaching hiring, and he wasn't in favor of getting Steve Nash. And then they brought up Kevin Durant, and he goes, his relationship with Kevin Durant has been described as quote unquote very distant recently,
which is one of his best friends.
It was a duo. Like, it wasn't KD came here and then Kyrie was like, oh, I'll tag along. Like, it was they agreed to do this together. So you said it earlier, KD knew what he was getting himself into with this. He really did. And you know, Kyrie, did he really know what he was getting himself into?
He thought he knew what he was getting himself into.
In Cleveland, when he came to Boston, Cleveland fans like, get ready for this. And we're just like, I was blind to it. Listen, if you're on the Boston Celtics, I'm going to defend you until the day you're not a Celtic anymore. Like with Kyrie, you know how many times I defended him and people were like, don't do this, like that, saying so many bad things. I'm like, listen, I didn't want to, you know, think of it like that. I don't want to think that he didn't want to play for us, or he was doing this and that, or he was lying or whatnot. Like, I wanted to defend him. Then he goes to Brooklyn, and I'm like, okay, so this stuff was true. And now I'm thinking, like, Brooklyn fans are like, oh, like, Boston didn't deserve him. Like, he'll be fine in Brooklyn because it's his hometown. Look what's happening now, buddy. Like, I mean, listen, like, wherever he goes, this stuff follows him. It doesn't matter what team he's on.
And it's getting worse and worse.
It's getting worse. It's just like, how much more can be added to it? Like we were talking earlier, like they're adding gasoline to the fire. Like, every day you're just putting a quarter of gasoline on top of that fire and just keeps going up more and more. I personally would not have been shocked if when that Harden trade happened, if Kyrie wasn't on it. I'm being dead serious. Like
trying to get him out of
Brooklyn into Houston. Like, I just think with everything going on, like, it wouldn't have shocked me if the Nets were like, you know what? Like, screw it. We'll just do one for one. Obviously in that case, like, you want to form a big three instead of splitting up a duo and bringing in someone else. But you know, just with this too, especially, I mean, him not liking the head coach, KD being distant, like, these are rumors at this point, but it's just like, when is it going to end? It's always something with the guy. It's crazy.
It's like, and the fact that he's gotten to the point now of just choosing not to play. Now, I know that obviously the video came out of him without his mask on
at a big
party and whatnot. And then I think that the timeline got mixed a little bit, because then last night, he was on some sort of call. He made like a guest appearance.
Yeah, that's the call.
Uh-huh. And people are like, oh, the Nets have a game tonight and he's on this call. It's like, well, the league, after seeing the video, I think
he wasn't going to play anyway.
Right, they weren't letting him play anyway. So I'm not trying to defend him here, but I did see on Twitter people like saying, like, he's on a call instead of playing a game. Well, he wasn't going to be able to play in the game anyways.
Yeah.
But still, it's like the philanthropist stuff is... Oh, that was a tough word for me.
I nailed it. You did nail it.
A little slow, but I nailed it. That type of stuff's all right with me, and I'm not tying it full circle here or trying to, but... And you said the same thing. Like, it's all right with me if it's one for the right cause. Like, I want to make sure, and there's no way to make sure, but I just want to believe that Kyrie's doing it because he does believe in the work, and it's not just a, this is going to look good for Kyrie Irving. There's no way of knowing that, so whatever. And he's doing it. You donate $1 million, it's $1 million to the right cause no matter what, no matter what the motive is behind it, so fine. But I want to make sure he's doing it for the right reason. And also, like you said, he can do it while playing basketball, and that is a knock on him. So if you want to say, oh my God, he's and not you saying it, but you know, he's doing such good in the world, it's like, you can't play basketball two nights a week.
Yeah, I mean, look at LeBron James. I mean, you can argue his impact off the court at the end of the day might become greater than his impact on the court, and that says a lot about the guy. But look, I mean, even with the season going on with the COVID stuff, and you know, there are the Lakers having really no time to get ready for the new season, he still played. Like, I think he's played in every game so far. Like, he's not taking any breaks or anything.
And he retired years ago, and still could've been one of, if in some people's minds, I guess, two of the greatest of all time. And that's retiring, you know, years ago. So it's like, and he's still doing it, to your point.
I think Kyrie, I think his heart is in the right spot. I think he means well. I just don't, he's just doing it all the wrong way. I mean, you can do both, man. You really can. You can focus on social reform and play basketball two, three nights a week. Like, obviously, I'm not an athlete. I can't say it's easy to do that. But, like, I mean, from my perspective, it seems like that's not something that would be too challenging for him to do. And by him not doing it, just makes him look bad.
Because other guys do it, you know.
Because everyone else does it.
It is proven. You know what I mean? You don't even have to be the outsider looking in. You're like, oh, I'm an outsider that's also just seen tons and tons of guys, if not every guy, do it. Like, how many players in the past, I obviously don't know the answer to this, but are just like, okay, like, I'm gonna choose to not play. At times, even the team was like, we don't know where Kyrie's whereabouts are. Go and do these great things in the world, but it's like, you never see that, which proves that it's not the only way to do it, which
No, and like I said, just like him saying, I don't want to play. Like, just, you can't say that stuff. Like, you can't say that stuff and expect people to understand that or not rip you apart for that. Like, when you're just not playing games because you don't want to, like, what? Like, yeah. I'm sure half of the NBA players right now don't want to play because of everything going on in the world, but they still do it. It's just, it's a job. Like, this is a commitment. Like, obviously, like, you're getting paid tens of millions of dollars a year. Him, Kyrie, they said that if he sat out because of the COVID stuff, he'd be stripped of his per-game salary. Yeah. Almost $500,000 a game. A game. Yeah. It's just like, is there, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in his head. You can only assume.
And you know what the big thing, too, that we haven't even said yet is that this guy's the VP of the NFL, the NBA
Players
Association. He's supposed to represent players in the league, make decisions based on, you know, the league and the players in mind and everything. And everything that's happened recently is Kyrie Irving centric. It's not the league centric. It's not other players centric. He's thinking about Kyrie Irving and he's supposed to be a representative of this entire league, which is
And that's how it's always been. I mean, he was one of the only guys when they went into the bubble last year that was opposed to it. He was like, we shouldn't do this. And I was like, well, you can't play anyways because he was hurt. So it's just like, are you making that this? Yeah, it's like, are you making, if like you were healthy, like, would you have been saying that? You know what I mean? But since you can't play and the Nets were the seventh seed going up against the defending champs in the first round, like, of course you're going to be like, oh, we shouldn't be playing this and that. You know, you're right. He looks out for himself more than anyone else. And it's a shame. It's a shame because if we think about Kyrie Irving, the player, he is hands down one of the best guards like we have ever seen in our lifetime, like of this generation. Like, in my opinion, the second best point guard in the NBA behind Steph Curry. He does things with the ball the best in my other than AI. He might have the best handles of all time. And you could argue that Kyrie has better handles than AI. His ability to finish under the basket at 6'2", 6'3", to create a jump shot, to literally just score anywhere on the court. Like, as a talent, he is unbelievable, and there's not many people better than him when he's healthy. But it's just this stuff that he brings along, this baggage that he brings along with him, that just drags him and his image down. And it's a damn shame. It really is, because he could have gone down. I'm not saying he still has time, but like, he could go down as one of the best guards of all time. But it's just this stuff. It makes it hard for him to be that person.
And
so
it makes you think and I don't know if that's the case, but it makes you think he doesn't care about being the best of all time. Which,
exactly.
If that's the case, more power to you, but make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and your teammates.
Stephen A. Smith said this too on First Take. And I didn't really think about this, but I guess in a way it makes sense. Like, he was best friends with Kobe Bryant, and you know, Kobe's mentality was, you know, play through everything. I mean, there are years when Kobe wanted to be gone from LA, but he stuck it out and he stayed through the dark years and he won two titles without Shaq. You know, it's just kind of odd that, you know, you had such a close relationship with someone that had that type of mentality and he's like the complete opposite.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a weird way of looking at it, but like, it's kind of true. So
I think it came out, was it this offseason or something, where someone said Kyrie Irving hasn't been the same, his mentality hasn't been the same since Kobe died or something.
And you know what? That wouldn't shock me in the slightest, especially, you know, he was super, super cool. That was like his mentor. Right. I mean, I think in an interview a couple years ago, someone asked Kobe, like, you know, like, you train all these guys. Like, he obviously worked with Tatum. He's worked with a handful of guys, but like, you know, like, who would you consider like your, like, someone that's under your wing? And Kyrie Irving was the first guy he said. Right. And, you know, for good reason. I mean, working with Kyrie, I mean, the kid has all the talent in the world. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me after Kobe's death. I mean, that was hard for everyone. It really was. But someone like Kyrie, I mean, you know, he could have other stuff. He has other stuff going on in his life too. It just could have been added just more mental stress for him. And that's what it could be, but at the same time,
you gotta make it clear, you know what I mean? Like,
if there's something going on, like, listen, if he has something going on, like with his mental health and stuff, like, I want nothing but the best for him. Like, if that's the case, like, I pray that he finds, you know, any comfort or peace, whatever it is, but you have to make that known. You can't just be coming out saying, I don't want to play this and that. If there is a legit reason, something's going on with me right now mentally, I just can't play, that no one's going to say anything. And if you say anything, you're just a dick. You know what I mean? But it's just, he's not making that known. So it's like, that's only for you to assume. It's like, we're assuming these things, but we don't actually know what's going on in his head behind the scenes. And that's what makes it all confusing.
And it's not even that he, now that I'm thinking about it too, it's not even that he's making it not making it known. He's doing stuff that would hide the fact if it is the issue.
Yeah, he's out at parties. He's out at the club without masks and stuff. Yeah,
making guest celebrity appearances.
Yeah.
So it's tricky, but
can we move on? Can we move on?
Think about that. That's all that talk about two guys that are now
30
teammates.
Minutes. We're 30 minutes in, and we've only talked about two guys and the drama that they bring, and now they are all on one team.
And
good luck,
talk,
Kevin.
We could talk for the good fact luck, that we're not even Kevin. Talking about Kevin Durant. And like,
yeah,
drama
we're not.
Too,
good
like,
luck, Kevin Durant. Yeah, I mean, seriously. Everyone says what they want about KD and him making the moves that he did, but right now he looks like the most normal NBA player. compared to these two guys, like on this team, like everyone's gonna look at him like he's the sane one.
And it's just all like, of a sudden becomes the sane, like loyal player on the team. It's like,
yeah, wild, absolutely wild.
All right, what do you say? What do you say we? You know, this is a predominantly Celtics podcast. You think we turn the table over here and get to some Celtics talk?
Yeah, let's talk about some Celtics. I think that's a good idea.
All righty. So let me pull this up right now because we tweeted this out. Shout out to Ahan, who's running the Tommy Points Twitter now. We tweeted this out. Let's see if I can find it. And okay. See it on the screen. So shout out to the YouTube audience if you can see this. But our tweet says the NBA is considering adding two expansion teams. If the trigger is pulled, each team would designate 8 players to protect in the expansion draft. And it's pretty much asking if you had the choice, who are the 8 Celtics that you could keep on the roster? So Dante, I don't know how much thought you've put into this, but why don't you swing the bat first?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like with this, you have like 6 guys that you like are hands down, like you're going to keep on this roster. Yep. Tatum, Brown, Smart, Pritchard, Kemba, and Grant. I think those 6, in my opinion, you should keep. Kemba, honestly, like if you want to look at it from the perspective, like his contract is expiring soon, like this and that, like he's kind of older, you can make the argument that he shouldn't be in there, but I think he should. And then my last 2, Robert Williams is being thrown in there. I said there are 6 that should be in there, but maybe it should be 7 because Robert Williams should be locked down.
I think he should. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me retract my statement. There are 7 guys here that you definitely like hands down should keep. And those 7 I just said. The last one, this one I had to think about a little bit. I ended up rolling with Aaron Nesmith. I pick him because he's young. He still has, you know, plenty of room to grow. He has, you know, all the time in the world to reach that potential that we want him to reach. But the other guy that I was thinking of putting over him, Taco Fall. Listen, I mean, you can't teach height. Taco Fall, I mean, there was only 1 game, obviously. But my biggest thing with him was, like, can he play 20 minutes a night? Can he play more than 2-3-minute spurts? And, you know, it was only 1 game. But he showed the other night, the Boston's last game, that he can do that. He played 19 minutes, and he had career highs across the board. I mean, besides a few little miscommunications, there were some times where he looked lost, people were telling him where to go. For the most part, he looked really good. So I had to really think about this one. I'm still probably gonna roll with Nesmith because I do think highly of him, and I do think he can still become something great, especially on this team. So yeah, that would be my 8, but it definitely was something I had to think about a little bit.
Yeah, it's like a funny, because I was looking at other teams and stuff just for fun, and it's a tricky number. You know,
yeah,
like
right.
It's a lot of teams go, say, 7 deep strong, and then all of a sudden it's sort of like a 8 through 10, mm-hmm. you know, 8, 9, 10 players, and just in their normal rotations that you're kind of like, oh, like that guy could play in any given night or whatever. But so mine, Robert Williams is locked on my list. I think if you were to let Robert Williams go and he's drafted in expansion draft, he becomes what he's supposed to be.
That would bite us in the ass, for sure.
But so mine is Kemba, Jaylen, Tatum, Smart. I already lost count.
I think that was 4.
All right, that's 4. Pritchard's one of mine, so that's 5, right? Mm-hmm. Then I have Nesmith. Did I say Robert Williams yet?
You mentioned him, but you didn't put him on your list.
Nesmith is 6, Robert Williams 7, and then my last one, and this isn't a slight to Grant Williams because he probably had like a 49% chance of being that 8th spot.
Okay.
Romeo Langford. Now, why Romeo Langford? Because I don't even like. I don't know what Romeo Langford's gonna be, but he was a lottery pick. He had shown in college that he played well. He has played on the Celtics and played good defense, and we haven't seen a healthy Romeo Langford yet. Like, he's had every injury in the book, and I feel like his potential to me, is higher than Grant Williams' potential. And that's what it came down to. Grant Williams right now, if you were to say, you know, you have to win the championship next year, now protect your eight guys, Grant Williams on that list, because I think he's way more coming out of the same draft, way more of an NBA caliber player right now than Romeo. But if we're fighting for that eighth spot in an expansion, I think, you know, I'm on a way lesser version of Robert Williams there. I'm almost shooting for the stars with potential. And yep. To me, that's Romeo Langford. But again, Grant Williams is right there.
I completely understand that argument based off potential. And, you know, Romeo Langford, I mean, I loved the pick when Boston got him last year. He just literally just hasn't been able to stay healthy,
right?
Whether it was a hand injury or a thumb in, I think he chipped a bone in his thumb or something like that. He's had a few different things going on. The guy just the worst luck in the world for someone that literally just got drafted. But, you know, you think long term last year in the bubble, they showed the stat. He had the third best defensive rating on the Celtics last year for like required minutes or whatever. And that says a lot about, you know, a young guy, especially like you being that young and being able to make that much of an impact on defense. At least his offense obviously needs to work on it. The shot isn't quite there yet. There's some improvements he has to make there. But it comes down to health. I think my thinking by taking Grant in here, I'm thinking like I'm looking at size and I'm looking at position. Because mm-hmm. if you take Grant out of there, the only big that you have is Robert.
Yep.
And you're the next guy, I guess, would be Nesmith. Jason Tatum, I guess, would be your four in that situation. So I think that's how I was looking at it more. And obviously,
which is totally fair,
which just makes sense. And obviously, I like Grant a little bit. Yep. I think he's played better than he did to start the season. So 100%.
Credit where credit is due.
But you know, I don't think, you know, keeping Romeo Langford is definitely not a crazy thought to have. I think that makes a ton of sense. People might think it's crazy because they just haven't seen him play and he's been hurt. But like, if he's not hurt, he can make an impact.
And to me, it's like, if you let Romeo Langford go and he walks in, he's immediately a bad pick and a bust for your team. You know what I mean?
I know.
It's like, I'm not keeping him over a Marcus Smart or even like a Pritchard, who seems like more of a staple. I'm keeping him over a guy like Grant Williams, who still is not completely proven. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
It would be interesting, because I feel like, especially, and maybe this just because, you know, we're fans of the Celtics, but we have such a liking towards a lot of these guys at the end of the roster. Mm-hmm. And I can't even really fathom the idea of even like a Semi Ojeleye, who knows, that he might have been a name that we forgot because he's been pretty good this year.
Yeah.
But a guy like him, not that I would like be, you know, Mr. Waterworks over here and crying if he were to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But it is weird to think Semi Ojeleye like leaving an expansion draft, or
definitely
Javonte Green, like guys that we've learned to love if or like.
I mean, listen, people like knack on, you know, when we talk highly of our bench guys, guys that might not play much, like people are like, you know, you hold too much value on these guys, this and that. But it's like, you know, this happens to every single team. Like there are guys, like if we're playing one team, like I'm looking through, like, let's say the Sixers, for example, I'm just picking a random team, like some guy at the end of their bench. Oh, let's say I'm just throwing a name out there. Tony Bradley for the Sixers, the backup, the third string center. Like Sixers fans could be like, oh, like this guy is like really good. Like I wouldn't trade him for this and that. Like I wouldn't want to get rid of him. It's just like, you know, people crap on us for talking highly of guys like Semi, but like there are fans that do that for their own players too. So you're like, you know, we have that emotional attachment, of course, but at the end of the day, you gotta make the right moves. And Semi Ojeleye, honestly, we didn't mention him like in either of our lists, but that could have been someone that you could have in sneaking as that eighth person, you know what I mean? Like, because he is valuable to this team, so it wouldn't be out of the question to keep him along.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people, I think, in the reply to that tweet, a lot of people were saying Taco, which I don't know if it's like fan favoritism or it's like, you know, how you've made the point before.
Yeah.
Too. He does have something that is such a unique, you know.
And it's just, you don't want someone else to have a 7'5" center. Right. That's my logic there. Like, it's just in general.
If he turned into a guy that could play, it's like, oh.
We could have had him. Yep. Like we had him and we just let him go. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, we could have had him. No, we had him.
We did have him. We just let him walk. Yeah. I mean, that's the saying. Like, I mean, people are, like last year when we signed him, you know, he bring him back on two-way contracts and stuff. People are like, you know, if we don't bring him back, someone else definitely is. Like, you know, as soon as he hits the free agency market, whether or not he plays a lot or not, there's going to be a team that takes him just because you can't teach height. I mean, if Boban from Dallas, if he became a free agent, I'm sure half of the teams in the NBA would be wanting to get him too, because he's so freaking tall and he does barely even has to jump to dunk the ball. Like literally like Taco Fall, you can just stand in front of the rim like this, hands up, and no one's going to get anything over him. Like, you know what I mean? So it's just certain things you can't teach, certain guys you want to have around because of those, that skill that they have, or I say skill, but gift, I guess, of being 7'5".
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. So Dante, we're 10 games into the season now.
Yes, we are.
To round up the show, we got a few things to talk about, some takeaways, I guess, after the first handful of games. Before we do that, I do want to ask you here, because I don't know if you've seen it or if people are tweeting this at you, but Marcus Smart, at least on my timeline, at least in replies to my tweets, people are starting to feel he's expendable. He's doesn't have the same value, yada, yada, yada. Have you seen the same reaction from some fans?
I have seen the same exact reaction, yes.
Where do you come out on it? Because I'll just tell you mine quickly. Everyone is basing this Marcus Smart, we'll call it hate, just for the sake of this argument, right? Everyone's basing this Marcus Smart hate on a couple games in the 48th minute.
Yeah.
They're kind of ignoring the first 47 minutes. And maybe here and there, there's a shot that you don't like from Marcus Smart, but I think you're ignoring the bulk of everything. And then, you know, and I've made this point before too. It's fair that if you want to say, okay, well, that 48th minute's pretty damn important sometimes, because it is.
For us this year, it has been, considering we've just been in close games every game, really.
But my thing is that the Marcus Smart hate is like, you just can't base the hate on a couple things he's done, even if he's now, you know, done it a few different times. You can't base hate on him for these couple times in the 48th minute compared to everything he's done for the Celtics in his entire career. And
The
criticism might be okay. The disliking of a couple shots might be okay. But the people saying trade Marcus Smart, he has no more value, I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, Marcus Smart, the last two games that the Celtics had, he didn't have the best showing in the world. I think he shot 3-for-10, then 2-for-10 the game after.
Yeah.
You know, taking shots late in the game when he shouldn't have been. Tatum Brown should be the ones taking those shots. Missing that layup and then immediately going at the ref, and Peyton Pritchard got that offensive rebound layup that ended up winning the game. You know, we talked about this earlier. Recency bias is huge in the NBA. People really love basing their feelings of someone off of how they were performing the last handful of games. When, and if we're being honest, so we've had 10 games, Marcus Smart's played great in like 7 of them.
Yep.
Like, you know, he talked about taking smarter shots and he's done that. I just talked about how he took shots he shouldn't have, but I mean, that's just part of the Marcus Smart experience. I mean, we've known that since the guy's been drafted here. But going back to the whole expendable thing, I don't want to trade Marcus Smart. I say this every, I'm looking at his jersey hanging up on my wall. I that was my first Celtics jersey I ever bought. Like, this guy is, you know, I love this guy. He's the heart and soul of the Celtics. But I do believe that getting someone like Pritchard definitely makes the idea of trading him more enticing. And the way I say that is, I'm not saying trade him to trade him. Like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving up Marcus Smart just for whatever. Like, if you think you can get a better score or something, like, that doesn't make any sense. I wouldn't do that. What I mean by that, like, expendable, is if someone comes along like Bradley Beal and they said they wanted Marcus Smart, other guys like Marcus Smart, he, let's just say hypothetically he's the center of the trade and you throw in a bunch of stuff around him, I don't know how you can say no to that. I mean, listen, this might have been something I said no to, you know, a few months ago, because I think super highly of Marcus. But, you know, just seeing how the team is now and seeing where they need to be to get to that next level, I think, you know, making a trade like that, if you have to give him up for a superstar, I don't know. I think your hands are tied. I think that's something you got to do. You got to take away your love for a player and focus on things that players that make your team better. And I love Marcus Smart to death, and he'll always be one of my favorite players, but it's night and day. Him and Bradley Beal is night and day.
Yep.
Bradley Beal is averaging 35 points a game, 5 assists, and he's super efficient. If you give me a second, I can pull up his shooting stats for you right now, because I was looking at these the other day, and it's absolutely absurd. It's not even like, you know, James Harden numbers. He's putting up 30-something a game, but his efficiency isn't there.
Yep.
Bradley Beal, all right, I'm clicking on it right now. He's currently averaging 35 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists a game. And he is shooting, where is this? He's shooting nearly 50% from the field and 38% from the three-point line and 87% from the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's getting it done. And not for nothing, his playmaking. Last year, his assist numbers would have led the Celtics. This year, his assist numbers would be right at the top. I think the only person he'd be behind is Marcus, because Marcus has been the primary ball handler. Yeah. So it's not like you're bringing in someone that can just I'm saying this like we're getting Bradley Beal, but I'm just saying, like, you bring in Bradley Beal, you're not just bringing in a 35, you know, a 30 point per game scorer. You're bringing in someone that could easily get his teammates involved. Him and Tatum are best friends.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's a situation where, you know, guys would be stepping on each other's toes. I think that would just be, I think it would be a great fit. But like, just going back to the whole Marcus Smart thing, like, you know, I agree with it to an extent, but not to the point where I would just do it to do it.
Right. And I think this isn't to slight. I agree with everything you said. I don't think this is to slight Marcus Smart, but I think maybe his importance to the team has lessened. And now his importance to the team, you know, last year, the year before, was at an all-time high. You know what I mean? Forget the skill, forget anything. What he brought to the team was incredible. And now I think you're looking at a couple different things, sort of that like grit, that motor. It's still early, but Pritchard seemingly has brought a little bit of that. And, you know, you don't need a bunch of those guys on the floor. And again, I'm not in the Marcus Smart, you know, trade Marcus Smart camp either.
I'm kind
of playing devil's advocate here. But one major thing to me, and I hope this is where people are coming from, because this is the only way it makes sense, is that we've always looked at Marcus Smart as the absolute leader of this team. You said it yourself, heart and soul of this team. With Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown taking this ridiculous leap of, you know, both of them pretty much just propelling themselves into superstardom this season, you almost have the leaders there. Now, they're not the same type of leaders. You know, they're not the yell and get in your face and you know, upfront vocal leaders. But when you have a guy that can score so many points, and now we have two of them right now, that is, you know, it trumps it. It's a leader by example type of thing. And we can follow these guys no matter what. With Jason Tatum kind of, you know, just bawling out last year, guys on the team are probably still like, oh, well, we know he's good, but this could just be like a good run of a good month of February. Same with Jaylen Brown. You know, if he were to drop 30 last year, he'd be like, okay, well, we'll see what we got. But now with them both just going out there and pretty much combining for like over 50 points a night, the team can say, okay, we can follow these guys. They might not yell at us. They might not get in our face. They might not get us pumped up, but we know we can trust these guys. And that's what I feel like Marcus Smart has brought in the past, a guy that people can look to, a guy that people can turn to when they need to. And I don't know if that's necessarily a role for him anymore. He still has the complete Celtics it factor in him, you know? So that's why I don't want to trade him unless, you know, a trade like you were talking about presents itself. But I think a lot of the things that Marcus Smart was the unicorn on the team of bringing may just be diminishing a little bit.
Yeah, no, I honestly agree with everything you said. I haven't really thought of it that way as far as like, you know, Marcus Smart was the leader and now you got guys stepping up. I mean, listen, Jaylen Brown's a leader on and off the floor. Yeah. I mean, I think that's easy to say. I mean, just how smart, how great of a guy.
You can do stuff outside of basketball and play basketball.
tied Kyrie back into this. Yeah, but yeah, you can. But, you know, like Jaylen Brown he's been that way for a while, but he's made that step as far as, you know, not being a leader, but proving it on the floor as well. And Tatum, you're right. Last year, you know, he had a great second half of the year. People like, he's going to turn into a superstar. But still, it's just like, is he the guy that's going to be the leader? Like, sure, is he going to be the scoring leader? Yeah, but is he going to be the true leader? And like, no, you'd probably say Marcus Smart was still that guy last year. This year, and what I've seen from Tatum, I don't know if we talked about this last week, maybe. I forget which game it was. But it was one game when it was kind of close, and the team just wasn't looking that good. I think they probably blew a lead. If I know the Celtics, it's probably a game where they blew a lead. But he was on the sidelines, like, you know, not yelling, not ripping them apart, but he was very vocal. He was just like, you know, what are we doing? Like, we shouldn't be in this
was
game
that
right now.
The Toronto game, right?
May have been the Toronto game, because he was just like, listen, we were up. We're up by so much and we have to play now because we blew the lead. Like, he's becoming more of a leader in that. Like, guys are listening to him too, because not only is he, you know, he's proving it on the floor. Like, he's not showing that last year wasn't a fluke. This is a real thing. Like, he's the real deal. You know, so he's leading them on the floor. He's leading them on the bench, you know, in timeouts and stuff, talking to his teammates. He's definitely gained a lot more respect and, you know, belief from his teammates that he is the leader on that team. And that's just an insane sign of maturity for him, especially at such a young age. But he's going to turn 23 in 2 months. So it's just for him to be where he is now at such a young age. Like, I think him and Brown are the true like leaders. Like, you can say heart and soul, Marcus Smart, but those guys are the leaders right now for sure.
Like, if you were to, and this is actually a pretty good way to sort of bottle it up. Last year, if you were to ask me who's the Celtics captain, I know they don't have one officially. Who's the Celtics captain? I think 99% of people would say Marcus Smart.
Yep.
This year, all of a sudden you say, who's the captain? And I think there's three names that are like, oh, well, who is the captain? You know what I mean? Which is my point in a nutshell. So, and again, neither one of us are ragging on Marcus
Smart. No. Like, this isn't us like picking and choosing. Like, we're not like saying Marcus Smart is, we want him gone, this and that. Like, we love Marcus Smart. It's just the matter of, you know, you can't hold guys so close to your heart where you pass up on things that will make your team better. Like, right. Look at Isaiah Thomas. I mean, when he got traded, I still have his jersey hanging up on my wall right next to Marcus. One of my favorite Celtics players, if not my favorite Celtic player of all time. That might sound, people might say, what about Paul Pierce? But like, listen, Isaiah Thomas was just so special in the few years he was in Boston. To see him get traded, listen, Kyrie Irving at the time, hands down, one of the best top three, and he's not third best point guard in the NBA. You make that deal. Like, you, Danny Ainge, like you say, you look back on it now, like obviously it didn't work out and all, but you still, if you bring us back 3 years, 4 years, and that trade happens again, that's on the table, you pull the trigger again. Like, that's just a no brainer. And as much as it hurt losing Isaiah, you got better gaining Kyrie in whatever way you want to look at it. Like, talent wise, you got better.
At the time, there's nothing really on the roster that's even now related to Isaiah, right? Mm-hmm. So even within that trade, but your point's totally valid. Like, that is a trade that you wipe out what happened. You go back to that time frame and you say, do you make this trade again? Like, I remember I tweeted out, I had like a list of guys that I would trade Isaiah for, fully acknowledging that, like, you know, these guys truly are the talent that is, it supersedes the love for a player. I think it was like AD might have been on that list. I know Kyrie was one of the names. So when he got traded, I was similar to you. I was like, oh, like, this sucks, crap. But then it's like, oh, but we also got Kyrie Irving. Like, I'm juiced to see Kyrie Irving play.
Exactly. So. Especially him in we're talking wishful thinking, but like him in a Celtics jersey and the Brad Stevens system. I remember me and my buddy were talking about it. I was like, this guy's literally going to average like 25, 30 points a game for us. Like, I was just like, you know, after the whole heartbreak, after I went through that, those emotions of sadness and heartbreak, and I realized what the Celtics got in return, I was just like, okay, let's go out and let's win a championship. And in this case, I mean, listen, I want to keep Marcus Smart around. I want him to be on the team when this team eventually does win a championship. But listen, if someone like Bradley Beal is on the table and they want someone like Marcus Smart, you got to do it. You do. So that, we'll see if that even happens. We even know if something like that would even come about.
How amazing was watching Tatum and Bradley Beal go back and forth?
Dude, I mean, they were like, it was just like watching a one-on-one match.
You saw Bradley Beal like talking.
Yeah, they were talking trash. Jayce Tatum was like, I don't talk trash at all during the game, but like, I'm only do it with Bradley Beal. Yeah. Like, if I have the chance, I'm going to. And listen, I mean, like I said, it was one-on-one. It was kind of just like, oh, they're not really out there playing team basketball. They're just kind of taking it to each other. Listen, Bradley Beal couldn't guard Tatum.
No, that was the worst. That's the worst decision. Like, Tatum
If it was like he was doing it and he wasn't doing that well, I'd be like, okay, let's take a step back here. But he was hitting threes. He was driving on him. And obviously, he has much bigger frame, much taller than him. So he was taking advantage of him in every aspect. But yeah, I mean, that was fun as hell to watch. I don't know how much of that led to Tatum getting COVID, but who knows? Do you see that tweet? It was like the Wizards games, like they played against one team and then the next day they had to sit out. They played Philly and then they lost all their guys. They played Boston, lost all their guys. My God, and they played Miami and they lost all their guys. Like, obviously, it's probably just a weird coincidence. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like at that point, like from the first game on, they would have known that someone on the Wizards had it or something. But like, it is pretty weird to think about that, right?
It's a coincidence, but you know,
it's definitely a coincidence.
I feel like coincidence is kind of.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we know how contagious it is. So, I mean, like, it could have easily just been like that. But, yeah. When do you think the Celtics are going to play again? Because right now, I have no idea. It's Wednesday now.
They were supposed to play three games since last game.
They were supposed to play last night. They were supposed to play tonight, actually.
Right. And then, so the second Heat game, the Bulls game, and then tonight's game, the Magic, right?
Yeah, and they play the Magic on, they're supposed to play the Magic on Friday.
So, I don't know. I'm torn on like what I think the NBA should do, because if they just keep trying to play these games and get and almost go toe to toe with COVID, I think it's going to blow up in their face.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, them being like, "Oh, we can expand the roster size." I think that's the dumbest thing in the world in terms.
That's not going to fix anything.
When you're trying to social distance and quarantine and keep COVID out, you don't bring more people into the equation.
That's how I think about it.
So maybe it would help in terms of getting games played fair. But I think, you know, when you look back on it, the best thing that happened to last year was really, they literally said, okay, timeout, let's figure out how to proceed. And I think that, you know, maybe not on the same, you know, you know, great scale that they had last year. I think maybe, you know, if they were to say today, like, let's take the rest of January off, let's figure out how we can best do this rather than trying to like make these little changes. Like, oh, well, now you have to wear a mask on the bench. It's like, well,
see, just not to interrupt you, but like when they make these new rules and stuff, these new rules don't make sense to me because you're still going on the court and playing a contact sport for 48 minutes. Yeah. Like, okay, you can't shake someone's hand or dap someone up after the game. You're going up against them. Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, they can't chat it up after the game, but they can play one-on-one the entire way. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Right. And two, going with like, you know, pausing the season, and that makes a lot of sense thinking about it. Like, you know, should take a break, let, you know, guys that are positive, just let it kind of subside, just get everyone back to normal. I like the idea of that, but then I think like they're going to come back and whatever, however long they take off, and it's just going to start happening again after a few weeks. So
that
to me,
that is...
it's just like at the, like they knew what they were getting themselves into. I think the only thing that could save sports or in this situation in general is a bubble. And I think that's just completely out of the equation now, just because every team's playing. It's not like you have half the rosters or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's just like you take the time off, like it sounds good, but you're going to come back and it's going to start all over again. I think you just got to, you got to stand toe to toe with it, and you just got to take the punches and just, I think the NBA is going to be one of the first leagues to get a vaccine for its players. So I think they really just got to, you know, wait for that to happen. CDC officials are, you know, them and the NBA are in talks. They're going like back and forth talking about things. And they're just like, listen, this is the worst month. This is just like, you got to hold on and wait, ride it out. Starting next month, it's going to get a little better. Obviously the vaccine's being rolled out more and this and that. But yeah, I mean, I would like the idea of them taking a break to fix everything, but I just don't know if that would be the actual thing that would fix it. Yeah. I just don't know.
Yeah. It's only my idea, 'cause it's the way to combat the, you know, pick and play sort of, let's try and get around this. It's the Band-Aid versus the like taking the surgery to fix it. But to your point, who knows if all of a sudden you're going in for a leg surgery and they amputate the wrong leg type of thing. Who knows if it gets fixed with that. So
yeah,
totally fair.
No, we'll just see what happens. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if we saw a tweet from Woj or Sham saying the NBA postponed its season, but at the same time, I just think they're going to ride it out. I think that's just what you got to do. It sucks. Yeah. You got to postpone all these games, but you had to see this coming. You knew this was going to happen. And if you didn't, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yep. Totally agree. But all right, we got a few minutes left here. We got to get to just some of the overall takeaways, I guess, from this team. We're about a seventh into the season now. And so what have you seen, just to close out the show, I guess, Dante, what have you seen from this team so far? Surprises, you know, they're first in the Eastern Conference right now, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've been impressed. All in all, I think you can't not be impressed with what this team has done, considering, you know, the guys that they're missing and, you know, the schedule they've had and, you know, everything going on. 7-3, two of the losses by 3 points or less. I mean, those losses are things that are easily fixable. Like, this team could easily be 9-1 right now, right? It's just that you have a misplay. You have Grant Williams got confused on that last defensive possession against the Pacers. They went down 21 in the first quarter to Detroit. I mean, you know, those two games you chalk up as losses, but they could have easily been wins. They only have one like really bad loss to Brooklyn. You know, the only thing that discourages me about this team is obviously how often they blow leads. Mm-hmm. It's just like every game, really. I feel like it's just every game, like you go up by 20 and it's just like you're not comfortable because you know it's still going to become a close game at some point. But you know, just being impressed with the team, I think, you know, expectations wise, I think this team exceeded my expectations so far because of the jumps that we've seen from guys like Jalen, Semi, and Robert Williams. I think those three guys have just really, like, I mean, Jaylen Brown, I mean, you can save that conversation for his own thing, but like these guys have been so great, and Pritchard coming in too. I mean, those
emergence
four,
of him is like,
yeah, it's like you
so
got
unexpected.
Those four guys alone, like them making as big of an impact as they are, is what's making this team so good. And you know, people talk about teams don't get better in the offseason, like we didn't get better because we didn't bring in any big name free agents, this and that. Like, you can still get better from your guys getting like developing. Like, that's a thing. I think people don't realize that you can still get better keeping your young guys.
We seem to be probably the only two people in the world that
understand
that.
And Riley, shout out Riley. Yeah. If he was here, he'd say the same thing. But it's just like, you know, that's just how it is. But all in all, I'm impressed with the team. I can't complain. I really can't complain about much. Just besides the blown leads, other than that, I like the team so far. Bring in Kemba. That's the thing. All this without Kemba.
That's crazy.
You bring in Kemba.
Even as you're talking about it, and I obviously know Kemba Walker still on the roster. Even as you're talking about it, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, good, good. You're checking the boxes on what I'm thinking too. And then this whole time, I'm forgetting that Kemba Walker still hasn't played. You know what I mean? That's what's crazy.
It's scary. It's scary. It should be scary for the NBA. Like, listen, I'm not saying, like, you know, the team looks good right now. I'm not saying, you know, they're on the same level as maybe a Brooklyn now or like the Lakers or something like that. But like, you bring in Kemba Walker. I mean, they're doing this well without him. You bring in Kemba Walker. I mean, Jaylen Brown exceeded our expectations. Jason Tatum was having a great start to the year. Who says Kemba Walker doesn't come in and starts and lighting it up again? And that just makes us an instant championship contender. We'll see what happens, but you know, that it's a possibility. It really is.
My last point on Kemba too is because I feel like we, and not we, but just, you know, all Celtics fans have created this narrative that Kemba's knees, like this touch and go sort of injury, it's going to linger. It's going to be there forever, which probably, like, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe that might be the case. But we're also just for some reason disregarding the fact that this time off cured his knee. He's going to be good to go and he's going to be fine. You know what I mean? Like, that is still a possibility. Everything from the Celtics side of things haven't been like, oh, man, we got a nagging injury on our hands. Mm-mm. That's something that we've all worked up in our head. Because
I mean, before he came to Boston, he really only had major thing. He had a one meniscus tear and he missed four games and he played, he played the entire, almost the entire, all 82 games the next season. Like, he really hasn't had that much of an injury history. So like, when we see this, it's just like, oh, another injury. Like, we had dealt with this with Isaiah, Hayward, Kyrie, now Kemba. It's like, we have bad luck. Like, yeah, I understand from that perspective, but it's not the end of the world. The guy's not dead. It's not like he's only playing on one leg when he comes back. Like, this time he needed it. He obviously didn't get the full treatment that he needed going into the bubble last year. Even Danny Ainge said, like, we weren't careful enough bringing him back, and they're definitely being careful this time around. Mm-hmm. So when he does come back, you can be well assured that he is going to be like, not ready. Maybe not the Kemba Walker that we're used to seeing, but he is going to be much better than what we saw the last time that he was playing for the Celtics.
Completely agree.
And I think that's exciting. Yeah. That should be really exciting for Boston fans.
Completely would agree with that. Yep. But all right, guys, I think we got our fixing in there of NBA talk, Celtics talk.
Yeah, we talked about a lot.
This league, man. But all right, so that was episode 6 of Tommy Points. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Tommy Points Pod. If you've made it this far, make sure you're subscribed on YouTube, liking the video and everything like that. Our last episode popped off. Thank you guys so much for that.
Thank you guys. We love to see that. Just knowing that people actually like listening to us blabber on about the NBA and the Celtics, it makes me feel good knowing that people are actually interested.
For sure. Yeah. But all right. Yeah. So you could follow Dante on Twitter at Dante on Deck. My Twitter is EvGuyBoston. We're loving this episode. You know, Riley couldn't make it to this episode, but he will be back. You know, we love the trio that we have. We're sort of like the Celtics big three at this point. But you know,
who's a better big three? Me, you, and Riley, or James Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant?
I think without question, we already know it works for us.
We don't bring headaches. We don't bring headaches or locker room issues wherever we go.
But anyways, so yeah, there we go. Riley is on Twitter at Color Sports, and I think that is a wrap.
Yes, sir. I think I'm tired of talking about Kyrie and James. I need a break. I definitely need a breather.
Same here, but glad to do it. All right,
thank you.
Talk to you guys in the next
episode. Thank you guys. See you next time. Yeah.